The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Back with you here, 710 KNUS, hour two of four. Charlie Kirk at 10 o'clock, Prager at 11, Gorka at 1, and then we go live and local with our friend Deb Floor at 3 o'clock, and then 4 to 7, I would say live and local, but honestly, he's a bit of our resident Anglophile, and I think we're about to hear him from some castle in the Scottish Moors. It's our friend Stephen Tubbs, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, or otherwise known as on the Centennial Parker, Colorado border.
There you are. I think I have an idea. Are you near the Broncos stuff out there?
That is none of your business.
Okay, listen, Stefan, are you back in the country? You texted that, but I'm not sure I believe you.
I am. I'm back. And I appreciate you listening on Friday when I did my live and local show right here from our palatial 710 studios. Listen, I appreciate you joining me.
You're
I know
back.
You just had the Thorpe report. Yeah, I'm back. What I learned last night, brother.
Yeah.
If there's one person.
This isn't a birds and bees thing.
To call. No, it's
okay.
Not. If there's one person I had to call this morning on a Monday and reveal this information, it was you. It was you.
What's
brother.
Going on? What happened?
It did come back negative. Thank
oh,
God.
Oh, well, that's it. So you're a man.
Yeah, thanks. You ready for this? Tonight at the Aurora City Council meeting, it is a high probability that members of the Aurora City Council will decide to become yet another sister city with yet another city around the world.
Okay.
But it is because
London?
Of our most recent trip, not London. Now, see, that would maybe make sense. Of all the cities, George, on the planet, that Aurora, Colorado could have possibly been suggested to become sister cities with, what do you think the first or at least one of the sister city suggestions on this planet, what do you think one of those was that was, yes, rejected by the Aurora mayor, Mike Kaufman, but what do you think of all the places on the planet that city was?
Well, just based off of crime, Chicago, but I imagine it's somewhere outside the United States.
It is outside the United States, and
down
oh,
south.
Were we so close to it just the other day.
And what happened?
Are you going to guess the city?
I'm going to guess it's someplace in Mexico or even further south. I think it's Chihuahua.
George, the initial Aurora Sister City International choice presented in front of this council, and I think they shot it down. Ciudad Juarez.
No way. That's just El Paso South. There'd be no reason to sister up with them. You know, that's crazy, especially after what happened this
otherwise
weekend.
Yeah, otherwise, they actually make sense after what happened in Aurora and Decay over the weekend. The initial suggestion by the Aurora Sister City International was that the next international city Aurora, Colorado joins forces with was only the fifth deadliest city on planet Earth.
Dang. Was that before or after they considered Chihuahua?
That was before, because tonight they're expected to adopt Chihuahua.
They started
in
with
Chihuahua
Juarez.
State.
Oh my God.
It started with Juarez.
Oh, and unbelievable.
If you'll give me a second here, I can read you an internal exclusive email.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, please do. And read who sent it to you.
Please tap dance.
I'm kidding. Don't do that. But
you're an idiot. Please tap dance while I
No, if you haven't seen this yet, and I wasn't aware of it either, look up Paso del Norte. Do you remember that place? We were there. We walked.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we talked with those National Guards, Texas National Guardsmen
The Texas National Guardsmen who are on state active duty at the time, helping to protect private property, by the way, but also part of the border. It turns out the illegals bum-rushed the Paso del Norte entrance there into the country, and like 1,000 of them tried to press through and force their way in. And it looks like, at least based on the reports from Fox and even CNN, they were largely unsuccessful, maybe entirely unsuccessful, because, of course, we had to reinforce things. But our buddy Mark Crowley asked a very, very good question, given where we were over there. He's like, why would they rush that spot? Like, there's a couple others that we saw where they could just walk right across. Like, why rush there, you know?
Right. Right. All right. Are you ready for the exclusive here?
I'm buckled up.
On the George Show.
710 KDS.
And I quote, it being the Ciudad Juarez as a sister city to Aurora, Colorado, quote, it was first recommended to me that ASCI, or Aurora Sister Cities International, promote a sister city relationship with Juarez, Mexico, in the state of Juarez, state of Chihuahua, and I firmly rejected that idea because of the size of the city, approximately 1.8 million residents, and the extraordinary level of violence and crime that its residents experience in this major U.S.-Mexico border city. As the state capital of Chihuahua, the city of Chihuahua does face crime, but it does not suffer from some of the extreme events which were quoted last Monday. Indeed, according to the World Population Review, border towns such as Tijuana and Juarez are two of the top 10 deadliest cities in the world. That is an internal memo sent by Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman. Now, rest easy, Aurora residents, because in your sister city relationship with Chihuahua, Mexico, that's only the eighth deadliest city in Mexico. So we're
headed
moving
the right
on
direction.
Up, or in this case, down.
Yeah, listen, this is, Chihuahua's about 4 hours south of Juarez. One of the questions I had when I first heard about, there was some controversy with the Chihuahua one, too, and leave it to the conservatives on city council to ask questions like, well, what's the benefit to us? Like, why are we doing this sister city thing? I mean, I don't understand why they do it. What is the exchange there that benefits Aurora?
Some kind of BOGO?
I don't know if that's it. And I imagine there's a Spanish way to say that. Billy thinks it's Taco Tuesday. I don't know if that's true. But it is shocking to me that the first go-to, and by the way, Juan Marcano, who has announced he's running for mayor on some slate of crazies, that he would not have done the Kaufman pushback on Juarez. I just want to know that he's going to go into Juarez by himself to take a look around at that would-be sister city, because you and I had conversations with people like our border security specialist about, hey, we just want to go across the border, and he was like, absolutely not. There's no world in which that makes any sense at all. I don't think you should do that at all. We were like, really?
Well,
step across?
One's beard would go over well in Juarez. And of course, last week, because there are concerns from, say, the likes of Daniel Jurinski and Francois Bergen.
Right, right.
What do the likes of Comrade Marcano say? They accuse those two female colleagues of his in particular of being racist.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. White guys really worked up over that.
Let me read this last quote to you from Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman in an internal email within the last week. Which I don't even know if he's allowed to do this, but we can talk about that another day. Quote, in conclusion, when choosing a sister city partnership, we can show the same support for our Mexican immigrant community that we have shown toward the Korean, Salvadorian, and Ethiopian communities here in Aurora. The city of Chihuahua is the right fit for an Aurora sister city relationship, and I hope you will join me in supporting this sister city agreement with the city of Chihuahua, Mexico. Sincerely, Mayor Mike Kaufman. That is the kind of lunacy
that they decide to put way up on the priority list at an Aurora City Council meeting, and despite the fact that it looked like Beirut on parts of Aurora City streets, or in fact Juarez, Mexico, they'll probably spend a lot of time talking about this, and if you're against it, you're a racist.
Mike wasn't in favor of this. Mayor Kaufman, was he?
No, he was totally against.
Okay, thank goodness.
Juarez.
You freaked me out.
The fact that within the last 3 weeks, this radio station, to your point,
I know.
Our border consultants wouldn't let us go over the border to Juarez. We're there at the Paseo del Norte, where they tried to storm it yesterday, and literally last week, within the last 2 weeks, somebody in the city of Aurora is saying, you know that Juarez, you might want to become a sister city. It's lunacy, George.
It is. Lunacy. So I'm looking at a bunch of different websites right now. And of course, Wikipedia can always be trusted, but they're using stuff that's already out there. Number one city for homicide rate. And the latest rankings they have are 2019. That's because I think they ended up killing the people that were keeping the numbers. Tijuana, Juarez number two. And let's just be clear that between just those two cities in 2019, they had somewhere around 3,900, close to 4,000 homicides in just those two cities. I mean, buddy, that's incredible. Denver was up in the 90s and people were pulling their hair out. Not the Dems,
right,
but other people. The top five cities on here are all in Mexico. Tijuana, Juarez,
yeah, no, they are.
Uruapan, Irapuato, Obregon. I mean, what in the world? Oh, and Acapulco, number seven. Your spring break spot right there. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Number one for the U.S., of course, comes in at number nine, St. Louis. Why couldn't we sister city St. Louis? If we were looking to up our numbers or at least look good by comparison, we could have just partnered with St. Louis.
Do you want to go outside of the family, so to speak? And a sister city program is usually like with an international city.
Mm. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Look, 104.54 homicides per 100,000 people. Just to put that in perspective, St. Louis, which is number one in America on this list, only 64 homicides per 100,000. I mean, we're on the road. Tijuana's double, like unbelievable.
Yeah, remember this when we were down in El Paso doing our live shows? I think I cited, and I'll never forget this, there were more than 10,000 homicides in Juarez between 2005 and 2006. And now they say, well, look, things are totally getting better. We are number two now. I think you see, though, the reason why, and I'm going to talk about it, obviously, this afternoon and evening.
Of course.
But you've got a weekend like, I mean, when I went to bed, I just heard Bill's news. You know, it got even worse. But when I went to bed, I think there were seven different individuals were shot in about a 24-hour period within the Aurora city limits. And oh, just how kooky that literally within the last 10 to 14 days, someone, I'd love to get the Joker that runs Aurora City's Aurora Sister Cities International, you know, of all the places on the planet, y'all decide that we should become sister cities. Maybe it was, you know what, George, I just thought about it. It's like a light bulb went over my head.
Uh-oh.
Maybe it was in defiance of the 710 KNUS El Paso
there it is,
project.
Right there.
I think that's what it is. If they're going to do it, we're going to make Juarez our sister city.
Without going down there, I really feel like they need to go down there. The other images that are still in my head, though, as we got to that parking lot by UTEP, which back in the day was also the school that was featured in Glory Road that won the national championship against Kentucky. But if you stood in that parking lot, you could oversee a lot of Juarez. Not the whole thing, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, buddy. The difference between our side of the border and their side of the border is so stark. I mean, it could have been anywheresville in some third world country. I mean, pick a place anywhere in South America, Central America. I mean, you're just like, oh, or in certain parts of Africa, even you could be like, oh yeah, that I've seen that image before. Unbelievably different.
Yeah. It's crazy. I know you got a busy morning, but thank you. I wanted to, let my buddy in the morning know
I can't
that
believe it. Thank
I was
you.
Thinking of him.
Thank you for breaking that news here. Welcome back to America.
Gracias.
Which is the normal top of the morning to you in London has been replaced by gracias. Thank you so much. Stephen Tubbs,
buddy.
4 to 7. If you're not listening to him, I don't know what's going on. Maybe you're south of the border. That is interesting and breaking news. I thought for sure it was limited to Chihuahua, which has its own issues. It's also a very crime-ridden city. But, oh, my goodness gracious, we were toying with the idea. I want to know who proposed it. I mean, if Mike Kaufman's the mayor that shot it down, who proposed Juarez as a sister city to Aurora? And maybe it's just they look out the door in Aurora and they think, you know what? We got a lot of crime, too. We need to find someone else who makes us feel better about us, right? Like, if we can hook up with the number two murder capital on the planet Earth, Tijuana being number one, we look great by comparison. Like, they could never partner up with London, where, I mean, I don't think they've had a lot of killing since a couple terrorist acts and Jack the Ripper. But down in Juarez, man, your chances of just being disappeared, it seems like it's a 1 in 100. Which doesn't sound like that's a lot, man. That is incredible. But this goes back to something. If you haven't seen Fox News yet, or if you haven't checked any of your online news feed sources, this weekend, it looks like more than 1,000, at least 1,000, as they're describing it, migrants rushed the Paso del Norte bridge. We were just there. I got pictures on this bridge, not me on it, but of pictures right by the bridge. This is an incredible sight if you look at this, and you can see the Constantino wire across the top of the fence. It's hard to imagine why they didn't progress more unless the Border Patrol was there. I just don't know why they'd pick that place. There are other places that would be easier to breach, and maybe this was all just some big diversion. These 1,000 here were causing a distraction while another 1,000 poured over one of the other poorest parts of the border. But this is crazy, and I'm growing so weary of this. It's been building for a long time, but this is really bothersome here, that these folks can't get it, that they have absolutely no right under law, morality, justice to force their way into the country. And I get it. We have made it so easy for them to do so with our refugee programs and our asylum programs and all this other stuff. I mean, that's why we had so many Venezuelans there when we were down there. They were all there on this CBP or CPB1 form that just says, yep, I'm fleeing Venezuela. Man, things really suck there. I would much rather be in Texas or Denver or Chicago. And that's where these guys said they were going. Really, really incredible stuff. But I've had it. I don't know if this was a stunt by the Biden administration to show that, hey, look, we really do have a secure border, or if this is just the beginning of something that is only going to deteriorate further and more rapidly than I think even we could understand. 2.3 million, and they're going to call them migrant encounters in 2022. What in the hell? Is that like a wave across the wall? Hey, hola, amigo. That feels like a migrant encounter. I don't think that's what they mean. I think they mean 2.3 million people who are in the country that needed to be contacted by people who said, you can't be here. 2.3 million. This year, it's on pace to top even that. 2.3 million. I mean, at what point here do we take stock of the fact that they are changing America and without our permission? I'm all for changing the immigration laws. I'm all for increasing, by the way, the number of legal immigrants. I do think we need to do that. But this is just garbage. This approach that we have taken is garbage. And the other thing you'll remember is each of the candidates, I think, other than maybe Andy Rougeau that we've spoken to, I can't remember what Kwame Spearman said, but all of these mayoral candidates who are running for Denver, who I've asked them, what about sanctuary city status? Michael Johnston wants to keep it. No, Kwame said he wants to keep it. Kelly Bruff wants to keep it. We're still working with Leslie's people to try to get them on board. My guess is they want to keep it. They all want to keep their sanctuary city status. That simply can't make Denver a better place to live. That simply can't make it safer. But what will is that new 3-day waiting period to buy firearms. As you know, crime is going to plummet. So will suicides. Firearm suicides will plummet because so many of them occur with weapons that are only 72 hours old. Of course, did they come forward with any numbers? No, no. They came up with some ancient, and by ancient, I mean when you've done a study and it's 6 years or older, that isn't recent. And it was a nationwide study where some lefty professors out at, I want to say Harvard Business School, because, you know, they know guns. Harvard Business School came out and said that, yes, we could see a reduction of up to 15% of suicides and some other percent of violent crimes. Don't count on it, folks. Mark your calendars, because we'll revisit this in a year. Hell, we'll revisit it 6 months after it becomes law and see what's happened to the crime rate involving firearms. Best guess, it's worse. And not because of this law, in spite of this law, because this law is going to do nothing. These are feel good, we've done something laws. We just feel good about the fact that we finally changed the law. 18, 19, 20-year-olds, you don't need to have firearms. That Second Amendment can wait for you to be 21. Meanwhile, vote, please. Vote for governor. Vote for attorney general. Vote for legislature. But we just can't trust your judgment with guns. But we can with things like contracting, buying a house, employment, all of those things. But we cannot trust you with firearms. Craziness. Folks, I'm going to cut away for a break here, but not until I tell you about a superstar who's out there. His name is Dan Kaplis. And I presume Dan is probably talking about some of this same stuff too, because that guy's got his finger on the pulse. But it's not just his awareness of what's going on in the community. It's his commitment to make it better. And he does that through a career decades now. I can't remember when that guy graduated CU Law. I want to say 47. I can't remember. It was sometime after that, perhaps. But Dan has spent decades of a career making the community better, one victim at a time. And that is, he helps victims of other people's negligence, recklessness, intentional conduct. Listen, man, I live to prosecute drunk drivers, especially those that hurt people. And the only difference between someone who's driven drunk and hurt someone and someone who's driven drunk and not hurt someone is luck. Pure luck. There is no other distinction to be made between them. And when someone you know or you gets hurt by someone who drives drunk, that's like, that, by the way, it's like shooting a bullet over the city and not really caring where it comes down. It comes down and hits someone. That person's got to be on the hook for pulling that trigger. And when they pour themselves behind the wheel, they're pulling the trigger and just hoping it doesn't hit somebody. When it does, you go find someone who's going to take a big bite out of them and the insurance company that foolishly decided to back them to try to get some kind of justice. Now, my hope is your life is good, which means your case won't be worth a ton. But if that's not the case, and that's usually what happens when you're involved in a motor vehicle accident, if your life is not good, then you need someone to try to help figure out a way to get you justice. So that whatever the rest of your life looks like, with whatever pain or limitations, you can offset that. That's Dan. And Babar Wahid, his partner, who I've known for 15, 16, could it be 17 years? Was it 2015 or 2005, 2006? I can't remember. Known that kid forever. I say kid. Now the dude's a seasoned trial attorney working with Dan to get justice. Give them a call. You can go to the website. Go there and find out who's on the team and all the great victories they've had. You can check that out at dankaplislaw.com. Kaplis is with a C, dankaplislaw.com. But the best thing to do, just have a conversation. Scratch that itch. Don't wonder how they can help you. Find out. 303-770-5551. 303-770-5551. Guts, firepower, determination, victory. Call those folks up. When we cut away for a break, we'll come back. If you have got thoughts on that too, what's going on? And my God, the Aurora thing. What's that, Billy? Oh, sweet. We're going to have Priscilla Ron after the break. That's wonderful too. She can get us up to speed on something we're going to talk about in the 8 o'clock hour with Dave. Let's go, Brandon Williams. It's George Brockner on the George Show, 710 KNUS. She can make your hands clap. It's our once and current vice chair for the state GOP, Priscilla Ron. Priscilla, thanks for joining us, although not in studio, so that's not as awesome.
Good morning, George. I miss seeing your face.
Thank you for saying that. Usually you have to do it after you eat. I get it. Now, listen, big, big day. And we're going to have Dave Williams on at 8 o'clock. But big, big day on Saturday. You were there. You announced on the show you were running to be reelected vice chair. Did it work out?
It worked out for me. I'm really happy to continue to support our party. So it was exciting.
Tell me about the singing. Joan, our friend, said, ask Priscilla about the singing.
Sure. I was going back and forth. I didn't have a lot of time. We only had 5 minutes for our speeches. As a music teacher, I use this strategy to bring my students together and
money
and unite. And it's. I didn't want to say, hey, everybody, pay attention, be quiet, what I have to say, it's really important. I thought instead of trying to get everyone's attention, I would just do an action. And I, at the very last minute, decided I wanted to just start with singing. And it was beautiful. I started with God Bless America, and one person stood up, and another. And, by the time we got to the second line, everybody in that room was standing up singing God Bless America. And it's an image that burned into my memory forever.
Cool.
It was the most heartwarming time for me, yeah.
And that was your speech? That was how you used your 5 minutes?
Oh, no. I after we sang, I turned to Christy and said, my 5 minutes starts now.
Oh, that's great. Now, tell us about Secretary 2. Who ran and won? Because it's new. It's a new person.
So Anna Ferguson from Adams County, she won. And she is a part of the team there up in Adams County, and we met for the first time on Saturday.
Wow.
And we talked a little bit yesterday and trying to figure out what are some of the things we're passionate about so we can share some responsibilities, and I'm looking forward to working with her and getting to know her better.
Was that a contested seat, that secretary one?
Oh, yes. There were four people running. There was a gentleman out of Weld, Robert Armagost, Cynthia Sarmiento out of Adams. Her name is escaping me right now.
Oh, we're losing you. Are you in the middle of candle making on the road?
I am passing by the tech center, and it's the worst spot
it is.
To get past the tech center.
Yeah, there's a whole city called Parker that Verizon has given up on, so it doesn't shock me that the DTC is similar. What was your takeaway from, and we're going to talk with Dave Williams, but what was your takeaway from the speeches for these folks that were vying to become the chair of the party to replace KBB?
Well, the speeches, I think, were catering to, obviously election integrity has been a big focus of the chairs, several of the chairs, but they talked about other things, uniting the party, looking forward, winning, saving our state. So it was a bit of a mixed bag, but definitely because there were so many new delegates at assembly, it seemed as though this delegation was heavily looking towards solving some of our election issues.
What percentage of those attendees, and I think there was about 388-ish who voted, what percentage of them were new to the process?
Ooh, I would say probably 30%.
Wow.
Of the people in that room were new. If I, from a hand count, it was a pretty large number.
And how many of those folks you think were there? I don't know how to describe this. What part of the party do those folks come from? There are grassroots activists, right? So they tend to be the most engaged and in many ways the most conservative. Was the election integrity stuff that resonated with them? Or as you milled around the room and talked to folks, what was the issue that was driving them to vote the way they did? And I should say that the first round of voting revealed pretty quickly it was going to be a two-person race. It was going to be Odland or Williams. And then there was the second round voting. That really got solidified. And then by the third round, that was it.
I mean, I think the general sentiment is, people were really disappointed at our results this past election, and they want to try something different, a different perspective, and I think that's the general attitude. I don't think it was necessarily about any one issue for everybody, because as I was making calls throughout the state, people had different opinions about what we need to do to reverse course, and I think Dave had more support. I mean, he had a lot of support people knew his name. And so when you have a lot of name recognition, you know, and they, I know he made a lot of calls. So campaigning is a big part of that as well.
What's your sense of how the party is going to look and act differently in the post-KBB era?
Well, I can tell you what I hope. First of all, I know because of the split, I think it was a Dave won by 54%. So that means 46% of the people had a different preference. And I spoke with Dave yesterday, and we talked about that, about, you know, everybody was talking about unity and how do we bring that unity. And I know Dave's been extending olive branches to all the candidates and saying, well, let's do this because everyone has a voice at the table. He wants everyone to come together. And I know, like, the day after an election, emotions are raw. But after a few days, we need to get to the work of the party because that's what it's about. It's not about any one person. It's not about any one personality, especially when people ask me about Trump. I'm like, I was a Republican before Trump. I'll be a Republican after Trump. I'm not a Republican based on one individual. And we have to all come together and remember what we believe in and what we want to see. And that's helping people in Colorado live a better life. I mean, we're looking at fentanyl. We're looking at taxes. We're looking at our right to bear arms being infringed. We're looking at low education scores. We have to be about helping people, and that is the work. And instead of fighting each other and being disappointed that our person didn't win, that's what we're going to lose ground, or leaving the party and taking our ball and going home. That is not the solution to helping our brothers and sisters who live in Colorado. So we need to focus, as I say, rub some dirt on it and walk it off. Okay, we don't have time to be upset. We have elections to win, and that's got to be the focus.
We're talking with Priscilla Rahn, the former and newly elected vice chair for the state GOP. If you spoke to those who did not get elected for party chair, or even vice chair who ran against you, do you feel like that message is going to work with them, that they're all on board and the hard feelings are gone now, or are there going to be people that just aren't going to be part of the team?
Well, it's their choice, and that's been the problem in Colorado, is like when people don't get their way, they just quit. And that is not a solution. That is not a strategy. And where people need us to fight for them. Our most vulnerable people in Colorado need for us to get to work and do the work. And that's me. I'm already talking about my plans of getting out there and continuing to support candidates, continuing to be out in the community and doing voter registration drives, because that is the work. I would hope that when people, you know, take a breather, and that's okay, but it's time to find out what they're passionate about, because that does not change. What you were passionate about before the election should be the same thing you're passionate about after this election. And don't make it about any one person. It can't be about me or you or opinions and personalities. It has to be about the work. And I'm going to continue to share that message and hope it sticks.
One of the things I'm going to ask Dave about in the 8 o'clock hour, and I got to listen to all the speeches because the Republican Women of Weld live streamed this thing, and then it's still on Facebook. If people want to go search up Women of Weld, you'll get to it. I at least found the seven speeches from the chair candidates. And I was interested by some of the things. Not everybody took the same approach, but some folks, and I'm going to ask Dave about this, one of the comments he made was to the effect of, look, our issues are the winning issues. And I thought, man, I want to believe that, because I know our issues are the right issues. I know they're the correct issues, but I'm just not so sure they're the winning issues in Colorado. Outreach is part of this, but what do we need to do to convince people that heretofore have just rejected us? He also said we don't have a brand problem. Damn, I don't know, man. If you look at our numbers, we're down to 24%. Why is that? There's something with the brand. I don't know. What's the answer to all this, Priscilla? Fix this, and you have 5 minutes.
I think the answer to this is we have to be about people and not things, people and not issues. We used to be really, really good at showing the community that we care and that we understand and we're bringing solutions. But we're talking about facts and data. And yeah, those are important to know, but we got to get better at persuading people and listening and caring about the things that's that people care about in our community. And yeah, I think our where we stand is morally superior than the Democrats. I really do. Capitalism and freedom and all the things we've learned about from our founding fathers, we need to get back to smaller government. So I think to turn this around, we got to be about helping people.
Priscilla Ron, my hope is we continue to have the relationship with you we had before with KBB, and hopefully we can get Dave involved in that too. You in studio, them, of course, by phone. I mean, they're just not as fun in studio as you are. And candles.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Congratulations on your victory. Now get back to educating those kiddos.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That was Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the state GOP, reelected for another two-year term. I sent her a text, congratulations, ! Like, are you sure you know what you're doing? We're going to ask that of Dave at the top of the hour, too. Now, listen, I got to read you this. Colorado liberals want to allow so-called safe injection sites, but most people know that's a really bad idea. Safe injection sites allow addicts to get high on illegal drugs like heroin and meth without consequence. These safe sites are a magnet for trash and crime and only encourage addiction. Help us kill this bill. Go to 710KNUS.com and click on the Colorado Undivided banner to sign our petition to tell Governor Polls to veto House Bill 1202 to stop safe injection sites. Brought to you by Deep Colorado Wells IEC registered agent Stephen Wells, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. And you should know, man, that thing cleared the House. You may have heard that already. But just at the end of last week here, it cleared the House. It seems to be on a bit of a rocket docket because it was less than a week before that it had just cleared committee. And it seems like we're just going to continue this drumbeat thing here. Oh, God, the people that are cheering for this. Representative Epps, who is, listen, just... I don't know. And her positions are contrary to public safety. They always have been. But here's where we're at. That thing is now headed to the Senate. Senate, maybe there's a chance to derail it, but really the biggest thing is the governor. If you can get the governor to veto that bill, I don't know that they have the votes to make it happen. Otherwise, perhaps a safe injection site is coming to a city near you, maybe even yours. Check out Colorado Undivided. Sign the petition at 710KNUS.com. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Super Smarties, our friends at Alpine Planning. You stick around. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710KNUS. George Brockler, back with you here on 710KNUS. It's that time of the show, that time of the week, when we get to be made a lot smarter about all things financial with our friend Amy Duncan from Alpine. Amy, first off, I hope you had a good weekend. Two, are we rich yet?
Well, good morning, George. Yes, you know, the weekend was a good one. I'm not sure if you're rich yet. Let me pause on that comment.
Make me rich.
Anyway, as I say, you know, nothing like a little bank crisis to make for
goodness.
A relaxing weekend if you're a financial advisor. Nothing like it. Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, taking a look at this morning's numbers here, sir, and I'm going to dive a tiny bit deeper into that story from Silicon Valley Bank, if that's all right, just to kind of educate your listeners a bit more on things. But it's interesting to see what markets are doing this morning. 5 minutes ago, we were down in the red pretty deep. Now the Dow just turned positive. Dow's up 70, and the S&P is only off 10 points. NASDAQ is only down 16. Yeah, last week was a tough one for markets, right, which basically was amplified in Friday's sell-off. The S&P was down 5% for the week, and it was just an exhausting week, right? Friday, Silicon Valley Bank made all the headlines in their call for capital and a run on funds Thursday. And then just over the weekend, though, hundreds of venture capital firms are saying that they're going to be back on the bus with them if they are recapitalized appropriately. So, in case no one's ever heard of Silicon Valley Bank, right? Listeners are asking, who are these guys? They've been in business a little over 40 years. They've really been a pillar of the startup ecosystem, as they call it, in Silicon Valley. 16th largest bank in the United States, about $210 billion in assets. So I think the reason this sell-off was so amplified is, you know, people are worried that it's not just them, but maybe a broader systemic thing. The broader worry is that not just Silicon Valley Bank, but that, you know, the broader economy, that banks lent so much. They lent so much money in good times when rates were low. And as rates have risen so dramatically, is it going to come back to haunt them? So right now, George, you know, I think the message for today is this, and that's don't overreact on something like this. Don't overreact on your entire portfolio after we see a week like we saw last week. You know, we believe right now in segmentation of your portfolio so that you've got near-term money that's not going to be affected by market swings and longer-term assets that are still properly positioned for growth. You know, the news changes on a day-to-day basis. We're not out of the woods, of course, yet with the Federal Reserve and rate hikes, but we'll keep our eye on things. I don't want to go too long on you, but, you know, as always, if people have some questions, we'd be pleased to help and give you some professional guidance.
Amy, you said the interest rates, they're spiking. I get it. But isn't there a part of you that's like, how did they not see this coming? Haven't we been talking about interest rates climbing for a long time now, like the need for it back when Biden first said inflation was transitory and everyone else was like, no, it's not.
Yeah. Right. And so, yes, as always, I think you're spot on, George. But, you know, that's what we've said to clients for quite some time now. The problem is not that rates have gone up. Right. We're still comparatively low in terms of a historical context. But the problem is it took them so dang long to raise them. Right. We were in this Goldilocks economy for well over a decade until COVID occurred.
Right.
So, yes, I think you're accurate. But, you know, adjustments make people skittish, and, you know, emotions make markets more volatile. And that's exactly what we've been seeing for about the last year.
Well, listen, I'm going to hope for some brighter, better news. I don't know. We don't have to talk policy here, but I mean, I don't know what to think about the Fed doing this special bailout program. Maybe bailout's too strong of a word, but it has that sense to it. I just hope whatever they're doing works. And so far, I'm just not convinced anything has quite worked.
Right, right. And, you know, I also don't appreciate, I mean, this, I don't think this is a tip of the iceberg moment in terms of giant banks, you know, a 2008 type scenario. No one likes to hear that mentioned. But, you know, I don't want to say the paying the piper type of a scenario, but, you know, people need to keep their eye on their own balance sheets, for goodness sakes. And, you know, this is a well-run bank. This is, as I said, kind of a startup ecosystem bank. This is a crisis, and, you know, but it doesn't have to be, again, this giant knee-jerk reaction through the entire financial sector of the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones.
I'm just glad that
that's kind of the moral of the story today.
Yeah, I'm just glad you and Brian Gabe are out there to help people manage these stressful times, because if you had to rely upon your own reasoning and internet searching, man, you could run down some crazy dark rabbit holes. I'm just glad you guys are there to talk some common sense into folks.
Well, you know, my next door neighbor is a great guy, but he's also a financial advisor. And
yep.
The two of us on Sunday afternoon were joking. I said, well, at least we have something else to talk about than interest
right.
rates this week. Nothing like a little bank
right,
crisis to
right.
get our juices flowing.
Cheers. Yeah. Alpine Planning Group's a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing, it's a matter of trust, and as always, they're prepared to earn yours. Call them today, 303-843-0918, 303-843-0918. Amy, look forward to talking with you next time.
Hey, thanks, George. You too.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Hey, that's it for the 7 o'clock hour, but here's what we're going to do. Dave Williams, the newly elected chair of the GOP, is going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. I haven't asked him to do this, but if you text us or Rumble text us questions to ask Dave, I'll try to figure out a way to fit him in and ask Dave those questions. What would you want to know from the guy who's now sitting atop the GOP in Colorado? George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.